Welcome back for the last hour of Issues Etc. Today, I'm Todd Wilkin. In this last hour, we're going to be revisiting a subject that we talked about recently. We got a tremendous amount of response from people, not only during the program, but also afterwards via email and other means. When we talked about Christians and mental illness, this is a conversation, it strikes me, that we don't have often enough. And measured by the response, it's also something that I think is in great need in the Christian community, among Christians, for the reason that I think we'll go into first. And that has to do with, within the church, sometimes through no intent, but within the church, there is a real sense of isolation for people who suffer with mental illness or people who know someone who suffers with mental illness. It's the kind of thing that, either whether it's said or unsaid, Christians are encouraged to leave it at the door when they come in. We're all fine. We're all normal. There's nothing wrong with us. That is the facade that we present sometimes on a Sunday morning, when the fact of the matter is, that is not true. Not for any of us. Linda Preuss is our guest for this last hour of Issues Etc. She's a board member for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Missouri. She also leads a support group every second Thursday of the month at St. Paul Lutheran Church in De Pere and deals with mental illness on a regular basis. Our phone numbers, if you'd like to join us with a question or a comment, and of course, as always, due to the sensitive nature of this topic, if you wish to call in anonymously, we will respect that request. The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Linda, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Linda, we've talked about this before, but this is something that really presses upon my mind whenever I think about mental illness, and that is Sunday morning for the Christian. When they walk into church on Sunday morning, there is always the pressure to leave your troubles at the door. And mental illness is one of the things that maybe we think people would rather not have to deal with on a Sunday morning. So we put on a facade that everything is okay, when we may be suffering, and sad to say, suffering in silence with the problems that come from mental illness. Have I painted an inaccurate picture of what it's like for someone who deals with mental illness?
Yes, I think you're quite right that for a long time the family is able to conceal the distress that may be going on inside of it. And we talked about last week that people with mental illness are able to control themselves a lot of times and mask the symptoms of what is going on within them. This, of course, in severe cases, or if a person actually goes psychotic, then it becomes evident to, everyone around. But for a lot of the time, the symptoms of mental illness are not full-blown, but still can be causing a lot of stress in the family.
You have been a key player in a support group for people with loved ones who suffer from mental illness. Was it difficult to get people to even show up and say, yes, this has been a problem in our family, too, this is something we have been struggling with as well?
Yes, we started out with just two or three people coming. Now, last month we had 16 people come, partly because we are trying to reach out to our Lutheran churches and to other churches, and that's particularly an environment where you probably don't want it known that you have a loved one with a serious mental illness.
There is a balance here, and we even recognize it here in the way we take phone calls during an hour like this. There is a desire for some anonymity, but there's also a need to break the isolation that mental illness can bring to a person or to a family. How is that done? Walking that thin line between let's keep the respect people's privacy, but break the isolation.
Well, the reason I am so outspoken about this is because up until 5 years ago, I was still in a mode of blaming myself for things that were going wrong in the family. Blaming myself, my husband, my church, my faith. I mean, I went through a terrible faith crisis. And then suddenly I was educated and taught that illnesses like depression, major depression, schizophrenia, bipolar, panic anxiety disorder, and obsessive compulsive disorder are in truth brain disorders, medically based brain disorders that medicine helps. And the research that was begun in 1990, because Congress declared the next decade would be the decade of the brain, and we'd really research the brain, is just revealing this more and more.
It is sometimes mistakenly believed that a mental illness must have, in some way or another, a spiritual cause. That if a person suffers from depression, what they really have is a spiritual problem. Now, while not discounting that depression can lead to spiritual problems, is there any truth to the assumption that someone who is clinically depressed, it has been caused by a spiritual deficit in their lives?
Yeah, I think the one thing that we understand as Lutherans is that God is, Jesus, in His mercy, is the one who reaches out and saves us, and that we continue as Christians to be both sinner and saint, and that we don't become perfect people here on earth. It is not a spiritual, we don't connect how we feel with what the state of our faith is. We connect what God says He did for us in the Bible through the means of grace, in baptism, in Holy Communion. We see those as God reaching out to us and helping us. And it doesn't matter how we feel about something, because God says, in truth, He loves us. And so often, people who are depressed are really, in truth, depending far more each day on their Savior, Jesus, to help them through than other people.
We talked some time back with a pastor who had had personal experience with clinical depression, kind of on the milder end of the spectrum of mental illness, because it could become more severe.
Yes.
And I had asked him, is depression a sign of weak faith? And he gave an answer that I think some people might have found astonishing. He said, no, not necessarily. He said it could be a crisis of faith, caused by a crisis of faith, but he said more often than not, clinical depression may in fact be the means by which God can strengthen a Christian's faith. When they suffer from it, they learn not to depend upon their own faculties.
That's right. That is so true. You have to, I mean, I have spent, you know, if you search the Psalms, it's clear that the psalmist, you know, writing Psalm 42, Psalm 43, he was undergoing some depression. He's asking, why is his soul so cast down? And encouraging himself to hope in God, but the very next breath, why are you so cast down? And so, I mean, I think that there's wonderful passages in the Scripture that we can take comfort from. It doesn't always, and joy, you can feel joy and that wonderful knowledge of salvation without it affecting your depression, which is a strange thing to say, but I can tell you that is true.
You mentioned something before we came on the air, a conversation you had heard on Issues, Etc. here with Dr. Gene Edward Veith. And he of course is our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May author, and he's written this tremendous book called The Spirituality of the Cross. One of the points that he had made was that he had fallen in earlier in his life under the misconception, and it was reinforced by Christians around him, that Jesus forgives you and saves you, but from that point on, you better obey. The onus was placed upon the Christian to kind of finish what Christ had begun. Is that one of the crises of faith that a person suffering from mental illness goes through as well, that misconception?
Yeah, well, if you're coming from that framework, that's very true. We have something wonderful again as Lutherans in that we understand that we are sinner saints, and that even people who don't suffer from mental illness can at the same time be committing sin. And God forgives them because of that relationship we have in Christ. With mental illness, we are not threatened. As Lutherans, we believe in original sin. We're not threatened by the idea that behavior can be modified by medicine, and that it can help people. Like, for instance, bipolar illness, many times people are hypersexual, and they commit sexual, you know, things that are wrong because of an illness, and the medicine will help modify that. We're not threatened by that. We know that they still need the forgiveness and love of Jesus in their lives.
And so you are not in any sense saying that any misbehavior or sin that is brought about by the brain disorder, say bipolar disorder, would be dismissed.
No.
Oh, it's not wrong. They couldn't control themselves. It's still a sin.
Right. But let's get them medication and help get their moods in order. And serious mental illness is a number of different factors in five different categories that are causing a person severe distress in their life and other people around them. I don't want people thinking I don't want people who are mentally ill blamed for every evil act. And every time somebody does something wrong, well, they must be mentally ill. That's just not fair to them at all. It's a number of categories that should be diagnosed by a psychiatrist.
You mentioned these categories before. Would you just, I mean, we don't need too much explanation because they're somewhat self-explanatory. What are the five different directions from which a person's life or behavior thoughts are evaluated that gives an accurate diagnosis of kind of a clinical, either be it depression or schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, whatever we're talking about here?
They are the mood, which bipolar is a mood disorder, wild swings from depression into irritability, rage, unrealistic ideas. They can be affected in their senses. A lot of times, schizophrenia, they will see things and hear things that the rest of us don't see or hear. Physically, they will have different physical sensations, like in depression, very heavy and just can't move and slow, body language. The thinking can be affected, so that a person with schizophrenia, their mind will tell them that people are putting thoughts into their head, or that everybody hears their thoughts, or that people from outer space are communicating with them. So the thinking is distorted. And it's really difficult. If your mind told you that, how would you know the difference? Let's see, and I'm missing one.
I'll give you some time to think that the next one over, because it's a good time to remind our audience that since we're talking about Christians and mental illness with Linda Preuss, and you wish to talk about this and join this conversation here on Issues Etc., but wish to remain anonymous, we will honor that request and not give your name or even take your name at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. When a trained psychiatrist or psychologist looks at those aspects of a person's life and finds disruption, and then they do, is it always a clear-cut thing? I mean, someone says, I want to know what's wrong with me. I'm having thoughts. I want to know what's wrong with me. My mood swings, or I have anxiety disorder or something like this. Is the diagnosis always clear-cut? And once you know the diagnosis, well, we've got a pill for that. Pop, here you go. You're A-OK.
Yeah, no, it takes a while. Since there is no, at the moment, there's no test, like a blood test or a brain scan, that you can go in that will tell you that you have one of these illnesses. They are actually working on it. The PET scans can look into the living brain, and they're hoping to get there. But right now, it has to be a clinical diagnosis. And the fifth area that I did remember, it's behavior. So a lot of times when the behavior, people are staying up all night, they're not sleeping, they're raging, they're irritable, that can be a key item in this. They're irrational. They're not on your way. They're not. You're talking about one subject. They're talking about something entirely different. These all start to become indications that the person perhaps has a severe mental illness.
So, just one more time: it is the mood, the behavior, the physical, the
senses,
and
the thinking,
and the judgment or the thinking.
Right.
And all of them. I mean, if someone just says, "I'm in a bad mood today," doesn't necessarily mean they're on the verge of mental illness.
Right. I think one person in 100 has schizophrenia, and this is a worldwide statistic going, with the same criteria around the world. 1.2 have bipolar. Then they say about 15% of the population at any one time is suffering from depression. So those are the statistics. It affects 1 in 4 families. So someone in the family will be dealing with something that is, causing some disruption within that family.
Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Linda Preuss is our guest, board member of the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Missouri. She also leads a support group the second Thursday of the month at St. Paul Lutheran Church in De Pere, Missouri. Let's go to the phones and talk with a few listeners there. Jane is calling from Arnold. Jane, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi. Linda, you helped me last week with a question. If someone who is definitely mentally ill and has been diagnosed with, let's see, two or three of the things that you mentioned, bipolar, schizo, he does, I can't think, not schizophrenic, but another one.
Schizoaffective.
Well, and they were saying it was schizoaffective, and now he's schizoobsessive. He's in the hospital right now. He had hurt my mom last week. That's when I asked you about something. If someone like that threatens to kill someone, should you take it seriously? His mother's in denial. He has done this quite a few times, threatened, even said how he was going to do some of it. Is that something we should really take serious?
Absolutely.
Jane, thank you for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's a good opportunity to try to get somebody into the hospital, because we talked about last week the criteria can be high. They have to be either about to hurt themselves or others. And so people, you know, they really need help. And even at times when they say they're angry, afterward, when they have been treated and are on medication, they are so thankful to be restored to their right mind. I mean,
is that something else that that the mentally ill might have to deal with? And that is, after they've received treatment, the regret and the sense of guilt that needs to be dealt with, not medically but pastorally,
yes,
over the things they've said and done or thought.
Yes, definitely. This is where good pastoral counseling and good counseling can help rebuild lives and reshape them. Because a person who, for instance, is bipolar and really thinking that they have every good chance of being the president of the United States or being a successful person, and suddenly is in the hospital and told, well, in truth, they're suffering a delusion and are mentally ill, this is very shattering to the self-esteem. And so we really need to reassure that person of their worth, their ability to have a good and God-pleasing life, and help them reshape their life in realistic expectations.
Back to the phones, a listener is calling. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Hi, I'm curious in how much of your experience have you found that alcoholism is related in with a lot of these symptoms, whereas so many alcoholics may be self-medicating what they do have and not being diagnosed.
Yes.
It just sounds like so many of the similar symptoms.
Right. Thank you very much for the call.
Yes. Then you add a second problem. I mean, this is called dual diagnosis, where you have people who are self-medicating with alcohol, and it is a real danger because, for instance, it is known that marijuana can actually help keep down a person's mania and keep it at a lower level. But this is not the way we want people treating themselves with illegal drugs and alcohol.
I'm trying to think of this from kind of the pastoral perspective as well, the perspective of the church. This can be then perhaps where a pastor knows or the church knows, we've got a family that's struggling with an alcoholic in the family. But maybe there's a problem that's behind the alcoholism itself. It's not just a desire for alcohol. There may be a desire to self-medicate. And once the alcoholism is cleared up, something else is there to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Sounds like it calls for a lot of follow-through.
It
careful
does.
Attention.
Well, and there are no clear-cut answers. But I think these are problems that are affecting Christian families. And as a Christian community, we need to be open and honest about this, because if we're not, then we buy into the stigma and the shame that is involved. And that's, you know, I refuse to do that. These are medical problems, and they can be treated medically, and then we need good follow-up spiritual care and good counseling. So I'm all for admitting that I'm a needy person, and I come to church because I need to be asking for God's forgiveness and hearing that He loves me, and that He empowers me really to walk forward in the life that I lead.
How do you respond? I guess, you know, this is a kind of question of sooner or later you have to ask it. But there is a mindset among some Christians that mental illness isn't just a spiritual deficit. It actually has a demonic origin, and that someone who suffers from any kind of severe mental illness simply needs a good old-fashioned exorcism or something along those lines, and that'll get rid of what you know, worldly types call mental illness. How do you respond to that?
Well, when you look at the Bible, which I believe, and I certainly do believe in Satan and evil, you know, Jesus healed people, and it was referred that, you know, people that had epilepsy or were crippled or were blind had demons. I don't know what part demons play in this. What I do know is that today we have medicine to heal these people, and that Jesus reached out and extended himself to them and brought them into the community. He did not shun them and act as if they were beyond the pale of our help. And so pastors need to be gatekeepers to good medical treatment. I mean, today psychiatrists are people who are not evaluating your, and I'm going to talk about most psychiatrists with the knowledge that we know. They're medical doctors, and they are evaluating a medical condition. They're not, you know, evaluating and criticizing your values and your past. I mean, that's downright unhelpful to people with serious mental illness because they have false memories, and they're in delusion. So psychiatrists work medically. And then if you want to, you know, for the rebuilding of a person, you know, go to a counselor or a psychiatrist, then you have to kind of be careful that that person is going to be working with your same values.
You would recommend unequivocally that people, if they seek out counseling, they do this from a Christian source.
Well, a Christian knowledgeable source that understands they're working with a medical illness and that they have to take that into account in the whole picture.
So in other words, when we're talking about the medicine end of this, the medicinal end of this, mm-hmm. It really doesn't make a big difference whether or not the doctor who is prescribing the lithium or whatever shares your values. But when you are in counseling or therapy, they really need to.
Yes. Yes, that's what I want to be saying.
Now, is there a danger for the family who says, look, this has been such a problem, now we have to come out in the open? Is there a danger there that they could overstep their bounds with other Christians? In other words, seeking out help where just casting about for help, and I'm not trying to say that they shouldn't seek the help, but what I'm saying, in a Christian congregation, can the problem in one family, if help isn't channeled in the right direction, become an increased problem for the whole congregation?
Yes. I think that one thing I'd like to say is that the best organization in the country is the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. There is an excellent chapter here in St. Louis, and in fact, they're having a walk this Saturday, which I would encourage everybody to support. It's going to be held at Forest Park. But this organization should be something that pastors refer their families and their people to, because they can get terrific education, support, they advocate, and they also participate in research projects. So getting the right help is critical. It was life-changing for me when I was put into contact with that organization, because then I stopped blaming myself, blaming my, you know, faith, blaming, you know, my husband, whatever, and I got treatment for the loved ones that were involved, and that made all the difference. You know, instead of, you know, the possibility of homelessness, they have jobs, they're in school, and so, I mean, these are serious issues.
Linda Preuss is our guest. We're talking about Christians and mental illness. We'll take a break here, and when we come back, we'll take your phone calls as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If Christian doctrine can be true or false, can Christian practice also be true or false? Is Christian practice always neutral? What's the relationship between Christian doctrine and Christian practice? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. You'll find answers to these questions in the latest edition of the Issues Etc. Journal. I've written an article titled Doctrine and Practice, and you can receive a complimentary copy of the Issues Etc. Journal by calling our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. I've also written an article on the Lord's Supper titled Responding to Real Absence Arguments. Plus, you'll find a list of tape and book resources on issues such as American evangelicalism, church history, biblical interpretation, and much more. Ask to receive a complimentary copy of the Issues Etc. Journal, 1-800-737-0172.
Australia's Church, a warning to other nations.
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the powerful book, Genesis and the Decay of the Nations. Ken, during your recent visit around Australia, what did you find so disturbing?
Even though I live in America, I do love my native country. Now, when I was growing up, the Bible was read in school, lots of people went to church, but you know, times have changed. When I picked up a Sunday newspaper in Adelaide, it described how we're a nation increasingly at odds with traditional Christian religion. Attendance at religious services has fallen below 12%, and that includes Islamic mosques and Buddhist temples. Well, what has happened? The younger generation isn't finding answers. Religion experts say, quote, people want a religion that's relevant. They want some reasoning for believing. They don't want authority shoved down their throats. They want answers that are believable, end of quote. So what's this mean? It's a warning. People need to see how the Bible's relevant, how it connects to the real world of fossils, dinosaurs, death and suffering. The Bible isn't just a bunch of interesting stories like even many church people believe. It's a book of real history that explains a real world. If churches want to stop the moral collapse, it's essential to uphold the integrity of the whole Bible, beginning right there in Genesis.
Well, can we believe what scriptures say about the age of the earth? Well, read our free booklet on carbon dating. The answers are found on our popular website, AnswersRadio.com.
It's 5:31. Good evening. AM 850 KFUO weather. Showers and thunderstorms for the remainder of the evening. Also overnight with the overnight low of 65. Partly cloudy and warmer tomorrow. Tomorrow's high of 88. Right now, clouds and some rain in the St. Louis area. It's 61. In traffic, northbound 270 right before Dorset Road, that is. Traffic is slow in all lanes. Then it's crowded in the right lane, exiting Highway 70. Westbound 40 between Hampton and Hanley, stop-and-go traffic. It's slow west of 270 out through Mason and then jammed from Spirit Airport out to Route K. Westbound 70 between 170 and Cypress, stop-and-go traffic. Slow 270 out through Earth City, crowded across the bridge out to 94. We have the normal volume of traffic on eastbound 44 heading towards the Poplar Street Bridge and also on northbound 55 towards the bridge.
Curious young minds can explore plants, bugs, birds, dinosaurs, worms, ecosystems, and much more at the Missouri Botanical Gardens Summer Science Academy. Summer Science Academy students explore the living world with adventurous, fun, science-oriented activities. Registration is now open for classes held in June, July, and August, designed for students entering first through eighth grade. For more information, contact the Missouri Botanical Garden.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Tomorrow on the program, the author of our Issues Etc. book of the month for May, called The Spirituality of the Cross, will join us as a guest, Dr. Gene Edward Veith. He's culture editor of World Magazine. The subject will be the spirituality of the cross. Part and parcel, one of the integral parts of this true spirituality, the scriptural spirituality that centers upon Jesus Christ, his cross, and his resurrection, is what theologians have called the theology of the cross versus a theology of glory. You know, apropos of the subject we're discussing right now, a theology of glory would say, you know, if someone's got a mental illness, they must have sinned in some way to deserve this as a punishment from God, or they must have a deficit in their faith or their spirituality, or perhaps maybe their parents have a deficit in that as well, and this is why they are suffering. The theology of the cross, on the other hand, says that suffering is not only part of the Christian life as those who live in a fallen world, but also one of the ways that God daily unites us with our suffering, crucified, and risen Savior. That we are, in that sense, partaking in the sufferings of Christ. Not so that we would atone in any way, but that, well, this is how Paul puts it. He says, just as the suffering of Christ overflows into our lives, so also comfort from Christ also overflows. That's the theology of the cross. That's part of the true spirituality of the cross. You can read about it in our Issues Etc. book of the month for May, called The Spirituality of the Cross by Dr. Gene Edward Veith. If you'd like to order the book online, you can do so by going to our Issues Etc. website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You'll find their information on the book, or you can call during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. It's too late to call today, but you could call tomorrow, Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, and ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, The Spirituality of the Cross with Dr. Jean Edward Veith. By the way, Sunday night on the program, just as long as I'm taking care of business here, we'll be talking with Bob Alico of Discernment Ministry International about alleged new manifestations of the Holy Ghost. That's live Sunday night from 10 to 11 on 91.5 FM here in St. Louis. Linda Preuss is our guest for the remaining 25 minutes of the program. You may also join the conversation by name or anonymously, given the sensitive nature of the subject matter, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Linda, Scripture says that the fruit of the Spirit is, and then it has a long list of things, patience, kindness, all these things, ending with self-control. And this seems to be an issue with mental illness, be it depression, can't control one's feelings or mood, bipolar, one's thoughts or ideas, or even to the extreme of something like schizophrenia or the other disorders in the category of mental illness, where a lot of other things can't be controlled. How does a Christian understand mental illness in terms of that passage? It says, well, one of the fruit of the Spirit is self-control.
Right. Well, I think that one thing we're actually finding is that judgment and some of these other functions that lead to self-control are actually products of how our neurotransmitters work. And so in all things, we believe that we are receivers of God of things, and that it is not we ourselves who do this, but God who does them through us. And so I think it is so important that we take both of these aspects into account and realize that people, that medicine does indeed affect the way people behave, and that it's important to get people medicine in order so they can come back to their rational being and be who they in truth are and benefit from being able to, you know, read their Bibles and participate in church life. The working together with medical physicians on this is really an integral part of restoring people. And this is why we are starting to be active within our church. We feel we have so much to offer people with mental illness because we understand and are not threatened by the fact that medicine is, and research is showing how the neurotransmitters do indeed alter behavior, because we believe in original sin, and all people need to receive from God.
You know, I don't sit there and feel guilty or threatened because someone needs to bake my bread for me when I go to the grocery store, or I don't feel guilty when someone needs to pick up the trash outside my house. This seems to me to fit beautifully into the gifts that God has bestowed upon all mankind by giving the skill of doctors to some, to those who have developed these medicines through research or who research the diseases, that I'm simply allowing God to take care of me and protect me and my loved ones through these various means.
Right. And as I speak with people who suffer from a mental illness, I think it's important for them to understand that some of the things that they do are really symptoms of their illness and not who they are under normal circumstances. Because, like you were saying, sometimes they're terribly humiliated and ashamed of what they have said and done in episodes of illness. And so I think it's very important for us to see the person separate from an illness that devastates the person's mind. And when we understand that, and when we understand that medication, unfortunately, it's not a cure-all, and it has some heavy-duty side effects, as we become educated about the impact of that on our loved ones, we really can deal with people in a more compassionate and understanding way, and therefore be more effective in our communication and actually, you know, achieve the results we would like to achieve.
Let's go back to the phones. 505-780-1800-730-2727. Mike is calling. Thank you for waiting, and welcome to Issues Etc.
Yes, hello?
Hello.
Hi. I've been told, you know, over the years that the whole explanation of there being a chemical imbalance is the reason for mental illness, I've been told that that's a myth, fortunately, you know, even in Christian circles. And, you know, I'm more likely to believe that it's not a myth after hearing your guest. And I was just wondering, where is it? Could I find information on the physiological causes of mental illness? Do you have, like, any internet sites or any literature, or you know where I'd go to find more information about that?
It's a good question, Mike, and thank you very much for it. Oh, you mentioned how you first discovered, after a long anguishing period of dealing with it, that there were bona fide, there was bona fide research
oh, yes.
to back up these contentions.
Oh, we have some of the best top researchers right here at Washington University in schizophrenia. But you can find the best information through NAMI. That's the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. Their website is www.nami.org.
It's and in St. Louis, you can get it, NAMISTL. STL is the St. Louis designation. Let me do it one more time. NAMISTL.org. You can also call them, by the way, and they have all the resources you need at area code 314-996-4670. That's 966-4670. 966-4670. That's both the website and the telephone number for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of St. Louis. Now, he raised the question, you know, there are Christians out there saying it's all a myth. It's all a myth. But we wouldn't say this of diabetes.
Right.
We wouldn't say this of cancer. We wouldn't say this of any other disease having to do with the other organs of the body. Why is the brain, for some reason, still kind of the last bastion of ignorance among Christians?
Well, I mean, when you think of it, the brain is billions and billions of cells and hundreds of neurotransmitters, all of which require precise receptors to be utilized correctly. And while we don't understand clearly every cause for mental illness, it's very clear that the medicine works, and it wouldn't work unless it affected the brain and influenced things. I mean, we can watch people while they're hallucinating, and you can see the areas in the brain that are actually lighting up, and the medicine as it works in those people.
Tell us about the difference without medication and with proper and monitored medication. What real difference does it make in the everyday life of someone who may suffer from something as severe as, say, schizophrenia?
With schizophrenia, that is not a split personality. It's a thought disorder where the person has delusions about the way the world works. And also, many times they hear voices within their head, and they cannot cut out noise. So they will hear, they'll hear the traffic, they'll hear rustling paper, they'll hear so much that they can't really function on what a person is saying to them because there's too much unwanted information in their head. And the medicine calms these voices down so that they are indeed able to, you know, hear people better, and they can then understand the delusions don't always go away, but they can understand that they're not real and that their brain is working abnormally. And they learn, like if you saw A Beautiful Mind, he had to ask people whether they were real at times. And people with schizophrenia at times have to learn to function in a different way because their brain sometimes continues to say that the world works in a different way than it does.
So the difference can be dramatic.
Oh, it's the difference between being able to function and have a job, a regular job, and being homeless, because people can't tolerate the bizarre behavior and they ask you to leave. And then you go to your friends and they can't tolerate the bizarre behavior of being up at night and screaming and raging and being afraid and paranoid, and they ask you to leave. So eventually, even though there are loving friends and family, they are unprepared. If they don't realize this is medical and that they need to get them into a hospital, that people end up in the street.
Cindy is calling from South County. Cindy, thank you for waiting and welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks. I know that the medicine does very good things, but what do you do to keep the person on the medication? Because it seems as though when this person that I know gets to be, you know, feeling okay and seems, you know, pretty, or gets to be rational, kind of, they don't take their medication anymore, and then everything, the cycle just repeats.
That's a good question, Cindy. Thank you for the call.
Sure. Linda.
This, I think, is especially true when a person has bipolar. And part of the problem is that the mood stabilizer for bipolar makes the person, it works and kind of lowers their mood. And so, you know, that's not, you know, all of us like to feel energetic and all. And so when a person gets to feeling better, and the medicines also have terrible side effects, like there's a huge weight gain, there's sexual dysfunction. So there's really a lot of unpleasant reasons, and you can understand when you know these things why people go off their medicine. But what I think helps is the education, for people to get rid of the stigma and understand that they have serious lifelong illnesses and get more educated about, you know, what the nature of that illness is, and really be willing to work. I mean, there's a lot of different medicines, so it becomes more of a family situation where trust is built up, and there's dialogue and there's compassion and empathy, but the education is critical.
We have another listener on the line. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much. I have sort of a two-part question here. First of all, to just follow up on the previous one, how long do you need to maintain this medicine? My doctor said, you know, for your life, because if you go off of it, you'll relapse, 90% chance of relapse. Do you agree with that? And the second point is, though medication is very helpful indeed, it's not the best treatment. You haven't mentioned ECT at all, electroconvulsive therapy, which medicine fails. I mean, it doesn't do the job. It does, certainly. ECT does the job, and I don't know why doctors don't go to that more.
All right, we'll get both of these addressed by Linda. First of all, if the doctor says, like they would with anything else, say diabetes or heart disease, you can be buying this medicine and taking it the rest of your life, should they simply obey the doctor's orders?
Yes, I think they should. I mean, I think it does not hurt. This is where a support network around a person is really helpful, a supportive family, a supportive psychiatrist, counselor, and church community that person has learned to trust. These are lifelong illnesses. I think that the whole person does need to be treated, and all of us, you know, we're hoping for a cure, but, you know, at this point, I think it is lifelong.
The caller mentioned ECT or electroconvulsive therapy. What are your thoughts on that?
That has become very, very sophisticated and very effective in this day and age. The old idea of, you know, one flew over a cuckoo's nest where people are seriously damaged and everything. I mean, there is some short-term memory loss, but it can be very effective, and people should be encouraged to find good technicians.
There is probably more of a stigma attached to electroconvulsive therapy because of things like the movie depictions and popular depictions than taking medication for severe mental illness. But you say the stigma in the right hands is unwarranted.
Yes, that's correct. They are very, a good technician can have the person still taking medicine and actually do it very effectively. So it's where getting educated, and we need to stop the silence and the shame involved with this and get ourselves educated.
Don is on the line. Don, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much. I have a close friend who is, I believe, bipolar, based upon what is going on, and based upon, I did talk to a friend of mine who's a psychiatrist out of state, and he agrees that it sounds pretty much like his bipolar, but my friend would not admit to it that he's even mentally, you know, that he needs some help. My question is, what if he doesn't get help? His cycle as far as is rapidly increasing, and in fact his marriage is now on the brink because of it, but it's not his fault, and he doesn't want to recognize, he doesn't want to seek help. What would happen if he doesn't? Over the long run, can he get better? Will he get better, or would it get worse? what is it that we have to look forward to if he doesn't seek help?
Don, you have just raised a tremendous question, and not to scare the audience or to alarm people, but what is the prognosis for someone with bipolar or these other mental illnesses if untreated?
If they're untreated, there is what is called the kindling effect, and this works like a fire. It takes, you know, a long time to get the fire to burst into flames, but if the fire then dies down and you have coals, the next time it will burst into flames faster, hotter. That's the same thing that works with mental illness. They often strike in the teenage years, and if it goes untreated, it will get faster, hotter, quicker, more out of control.
Does it lead, you mentioned homelessness as kind of a sociological effect of something like schizophrenia. Does it lead to early death, the disease itself, the actual chemical imbalance?
Well, in terms of there is a high possibility of suicide, especially with bipolar. And ironically, sometimes the suicide can come after a person has been treated. And this is true of depression, too, because a person who, you know, has gotten a diagnosis and gets medicine may finally have the energy actually to kill themselves because they can't live with the prognosis of their life.
So medicine is not the whole answer here? I mean, just going and taking your pills?
No, it isn't. I mean, really, the best results occur when people have a supportive network, including medicine, but that, you know, that support of friends and that help with counseling, those wraparound services. We need support from the government because a lot of times people need to retrain for vocations so that they can go back and earn a livelihood.
How good is the medicine at this point? We talk a lot about medication, but how good is it? And are there treatments that are now defunct that you would say beware of that? Anyone who prescribes that, stay away from it.
Yeah, no, I can't. The medicines are much better. In the 50s, we had some good medicines that took away a person's hallucinations. And as a result, they dumped all the people out onto the street. But those medicines had even more terrible side effects that were long-term, and they didn't help the person recover. Whereas the medicines today are they're much more targeted. And so they don't hit areas that in your brain that don't need to be hit. And as a result, the people today can not only stop hallucinating, but they can actually start to recover as well. So they leave the state institutions and they actually are able to get retraining and get jobs, whereas that didn't happen in the 50s. They ended up on the street.
The dilemma that I imagine many listening who are touched by this are facing, Linda, is that they have someone and they've been suspecting for some time, maybe they've just known for some time that there's a real serious brain disorder at work, and they are saying, I know it's there, but this person does not realize how ill they are, and we can't convince them. What needs to be done? What's the first step that you would suggest for that person?
Well, that's a tough question. I guess contact the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill because they are skilled in giving. They have a 12-week program that helps educate families on better communication skills. And they also can tell you about involuntary commitments and how that is done. And sometimes that is very appropriate and the only way that it gets done. I mean, thank goodness that some of our policemen are becoming more knowledgeable, some of our judges and all. But you really need, you know, help, outside help with this. And the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill is the best source of that at this point.
Someone else is saying, and I think perhaps those who have lived with this for some time say, I would like to do what Linda does in her church. I would like to gather from within my church people who are having the same experience, be able to share the experiences, but also the best advice. And really, in a lot of ways, the mutual consolation of fellow Christians in this. How would I go about doing that without standing up and just hearing the crickets chirp when I say I'd like to start or talk to other people who have suffered with mental illness in their families?
Well, those people are very brave because obviously there is a lot of hurt and anger when you talk to families with severe mental illness because a lot of times, like you were saying, there's divorce and there's tear-up. With the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, they train their support group leaders, and the support groups are structured, which is very much of a benefit. And there are I think there are at least 12 or 15 different groups that meet throughout St. Louis. So if you want to start this type of group, NAMI is very interested in working with you and will help give you the guidelines.
By the way, folks, before I forget and before our time gets away from us, I want to remind you about the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of St. Louis. Their website address is namistl.org, namistl.org, or you could call them at area code 314-966-4670. That's 966-4670. Now, on May 10th, you mentioned they're going to be having this walk, the walk or welcoming pledges for people who are participating. What does the actual money go for?
Well, the money goes to support education with the family-to-family classes. Those classes are offered free, but someone does need to pay for the materials, and that's the pledge money. It goes for research. We support research. We also advocate at the federal and the state level for better services for people with serious mental illness and their families. So it's money well spent.
We've got about a minute here before we go, before we conclude our conversation, Linda. The person who, the parent, let's put it that way, the parent who has a child who is mentally ill may be facing, well, the rest of their life dealing with this child in a similar way to a child who's disabled in some way, physically. What word of comfort do you give to that parent who says this will now be a commitment above and beyond what an ordinary parent is called to do for their children?
Well, we believe by faith that our children are a blessing from God. And I would say that the comfort I'd offer is this is not your fault. I mean, this is it truly is a medical illness that you have been asked to deal with. I actually have the verses that you have printed or read. I've printed them in all my books to remind myself that the suffering I've gone through, I can now turn into comfort for others.
Linda Preuss, thank you so much for being our guest again on Issues Etc. Folks, here again is that phone number for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of St. Louis. Area code 314-966-4670, 314-966-4670. Do not hesitate to call. There is no shame in this, or to contact your pastor. The website address again, namistl.org. That's namistl.org. Tomorrow on the program, Dr. Gene Edward Veith of World Magazine will be our guest as we talk about the spirituality of the cross. And Sunday night on the program, these alleged new manifestations of the Holy Ghost. Are they the Spirit of God moving or something else? Bob Lico of Discernment Ministry International will be our guest to talk about that live Sunday night from 10 to 11 on 91.5 FM here in St. Louis. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.